Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
Welcome to another episode of Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Ri Ryu.
And this episode, we're going to be talking about our September book club pick, Goodbye Vitamin by Rachel Kong. And to help us talk about this book, we brought in a special guest. She is the executive director of Collaboration, a nonprofit organization supporting Asian Americans in the arts and entertainment. She's also an actress, an entrepreneur, and a professional opinion haver.
And podcaster, and your co-host.
She's also my co-host for one of the other podcasts I do called The Collabcast, which is the official podcast of Collaboration, bringing you pop culture and the creative life from an Asian American perspective.
Marvin forgot what podcast he was in.
I know, he's code-switching right now.
And she is also the host of the brand new podcast, First of All, part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
With all things sassy.
Minji Chang.
Hi, guys. Hi. How is everyone doing?
Good. Sorry, how are you?
Sounding particularly congested, but I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us. I think the moment that we decided to pick this book, Goodbye Vitamin, Rira insisted on having you
as part of the conversation.
Possibly because of all the talks we have about family.
Of course.
Yeah, like,
on the Collabcast.
That was definitely a deciding factor.
Especially my father, which I've probably mentioned 8 trillion times. But yeah, thank you. I'm so honored.
But yeah, so this is our monthly book club discussion podcast. So we're going to be talking at length about the book Goodbye Vitamin. So if you haven't read the book yet, this is your spoiler warning. Although if you're listening to us, you're probably here to hear our hot takes on this book.
I found out that a lot of our listeners don't care about spoilers. They'll listen to it and then they'll read the book afterward. And I'm just like, how does that not ruin your reading experience?
You just convinced them is all. It's like your discussion was an inspiration.
So thank you for everyone who have been engaging with us on our Goodreads forum. You can find the Books and Boba group on Goodreads by searching Books and Boba. We have a lot of members that have been discussing, and we have like a 20 message long thread for Goodbye Vitamin, which is amazing.
So thank
you,
read that.
Everybody who has been commenting. We're going to pick and choose some of your guys' comments during the discussion, hopefully. I have it open on my laptop, and if there's any relevant points, I will bring them up. Thanks also to one of our members, David, actually gave us a plug on his. He has a, I guess he's from Canada, and he has his own book vlog. And he gave us a plug, so thank you so much,
David. He's a booktuber. There's so many of those now, and it makes me so happy.
This is amazing. I feel like I'm entering a new world through you guys, and this is awesome.
Well, okay. So as many people know, this book club was an excuse for me to start reading. But Minji has been reading nonstop, right? Constantly for like at least since.
Here it's touch and go. It's the same as anything. Like, it's the same thing with any media consumption. You know, Marvin can attest to the fact that I go a million miles an hour doing a lot of different things. So I don't get to consume as much as I'd like to be honest. Other people's
books. You read
books
a lot of biographies and.
Like, it's a mix. Like, it's a mix depending on whatever the topic is, if it catches my eye.
But yeah, thank you so much for, it's been hard. We're having a really busy month at Collaboration. So getting Minji to sit down and read.
I was so grateful for it. I'm going through a move right now. And so that's what delayed all this.
It's the best time to
But
like,
it was so good. It was, you guys. You guys blessed my life by like, I have to sit and enjoy this lovely book right now. Yeah.
But on that note, let's get started. Goodbye Vitamin by Rachel Kong. I'm going to read the description to get us started. Freshly disengaged from her fiance and feeling that life has not turned out quite the way she planned, 30-year-old Ruth quits her job, leaves town, and arrives at her parents' home to find family life more complicated than she'd realized. Her father, a prominent history professor, is losing his memory. Her mother, like Ruth, is smarting from a betrayal. But over the course of a year, the comedy in Ruth's situation takes hold, gently transforming her grief. So we did mention this book a while ago during our new releases, because this is a relatively new book, right?
Yeah, it came out this year, which is why it's out in hardcover. And it's been so hard to get it at some libraries.
It's all gone.
My local library, it had a couple of spare copies, but a lot of our Goodreads members, they were like, I cannot get it. I have to buy this book.
All over Los Angeles Public Library, in all of the ones that I looked at, they're all gone, which is great.
It is incredibly popular. And I mean,
and it's a very universal. I feel like I remember thinking about this book when we first read the description.
Yeah, you called it a millennial book. Yeah. And I was just like, I don't
Way to minimize it.
Not
Marv.
Really, but
I mean, it's someone moving home after like trying to make a life for themselves and having to, you know, settle back into
It's like a quarter life crisis novel, because I feel like everyone goes through a transition period where they're really terrified and they don't know what to do with their life, and sometimes they have to like move back with their parents. I think it's a very like relatable transition depending on like where you are in life, but this was our first epistolary novel.
So what does that mean? Because I'm not literate.
Yeah, I was about to say
it means like diary format. Okay. So it's like written there are like books like in Jane Austen novels where it's written in like letter format, and this book it's written kind of in a rough bullet journal format.
It actually took me a while to get into that format.
Same here.
Took
me about 60 pages and then I got used to it.
Yeah, because I don't journal myself, so I don't really like.
Maybe that was I was like, if I wrote a book, that's one of the funny things that I thought when I first started. I was like, if I wrote a book, one of them would probably be just like this.
Yeah.
Because I journal a lot and that's how I think.
Actually, the author, Rachel Kong, she was inspired to write in this format because there's another book on like bullet journal. It's called like the 5-year journal. And this book has like a bunch of questions on one page and you answer it each day. And and by the time you finish the book, you have like 5 years worth of like journaling.
That's amazing.
So she kind of took that idea for her book. And I also know that Rachel Kong was the former editor of Lucky Peach, which is a culinary magazine, which is why there was a lot of food in this book.
Which I loved.
But yeah, let's overall reactions. I liked the book a lot.
I loved it.
I personally, so I'm a really fast reader. I can read about 90 to 100 pages per hour, roughly. And this book took me 4 days to finish.
Wow.
And that's because, I mean, one, because of the format. I'm not a really big fan of the whole journal format, but for me, like it was, I don't know if it was the best time for me to read this book or the worst time to read this book, because I am close to Ruth's age. I'm a little bit younger, but, personally, I had to take breaks. I was like, I can't handle the feels and the emotions right now.
See, that's right up my alley. So it was, that's why I loved it so much. I was like, oh, so someone else like gets, and funnily, one spoiler, her birthday's in July.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, of course it is.
Oh, yeah. Cancer.
My fellow Cancer with all the feelings.
Yeah. I guess for me, because I, you know, am a dude and I guess my family situation isn't as crazy.
Oh, so your family situation isn't a K-drama.
But this is the thing. Like, we're going to label that a K-drama, but I feel like, honestly, from my life experiences, and these are, like, dealing with very normal people to having a lot of drama, i.e., like, my family, I don't feel like this is that K-drama. Maybe it's contextualized because mine is on the more dramatic end, and I feel like this isn't, I've heard worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not your run of the mill I think that's also the part of like...
Yeah. I mean, the fact that it takes place in Southern California. There was a shout out to the San Gabriel Mission, which I grew up near, which is awesome. I like that the characters here were... Honestly, like most of the characters in this story are people that I know.
Interesting.
And it's like, it's... Like I said, it's a millennial book because it's... I guess as a millennial and on the older side, I can relate to a lot of the themes, at least the feelings of having to move back, not knowing where you stand on things. And, you know, in terms of romance, like I don't have as deep of a experience in that aspect of betrayal and stuff like that. I guess I've been lucky, but
yeah. I'm glad, Mark.
Yeah.
But I do have dementia and not in my immediate family, but in my extended family, there are family members taking care of loved ones with dementia. So that definitely is something that has been on the mind as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alzheimer runs in my family. And actually my grandmother is going through it right now. And my grandfather had it. And yeah, it's most likely that my parents will have it and I will have it. And it's, I've known this from a very young age. So, this book definitely brought up a lot of fears that I'm just like, I don't want to pay attention to the future. I don't want to know what that it's like to take care of my parents. And the thing is, I don't have the best relationship with my parents. We tolerate each other pretty well right now, but, like a couple of years ago and pretty much for most of my life, it hasn't been. We've been pretty much a very dysfunctional family, very similar to Ruth's family. And a lot of the family circumstances are similar to my family, which is why I said I needed to take breaks. I cannot power through this book like I do with any other book. But I was actually really surprised that for a book about Alzheimer's and taking care of your parents and being in your 30s and not knowing what you want to do, it was a very funny book. It had a lot of dark humor to it. It kind of reminded me of like a dark indie coming of age film.
I completely agree. I had an easy time, like you said, because it felt very, she was very specific. All those details really led to, at least for us, because we're in Southern California, that very specific imagery when she's talking about going to Silver Lake and when she's talking about going to certain parts of, you know, San Gabriel Valley. I was like, well, I know exactly what to picture with that and the way she described people. But I think that it's great. I mean, there's certain books where I think it's great that you can get through them in a matter of hours if you're that fast of a reader. But I personally think that, I think this was film too, because I'm more into film, but things that really do impact you. I mean, that's ultimately a lot of the purpose behind why people write and create film and art to begin with. And so I would be kind of taking that as a compliment as a writer if someone needed to take breaks, but they kept going and that they took their time. I'd be like, wow, I really touched your heart.
So we just had the first anniversary of Books and Boba, and Rira sent me this GIF.
Oh, yeah.
That's like, this girl just saying, check out these books. It's like movies in your mind. And yeah, like, it's, art can affect you in ways, like some people can look at a painting and get super emotional, right? I haven't experienced that yet.
Yeah.
But I have experienced that with books and with movies and media. So, even like video games, you know, they're getting better at storytelling these days.
I mean, they have a lot to work with.
But yeah, like that's, you know, I think that's really interesting. And I agree with Minji. It's good that it elicited those feelings, but also like there are reasons it did that just because these are things that people experience.
Right.
Yeah. Should we talk about Ruth?
Yeah. I wanted to start off with, not the beginning of the book, but I guess the circumstance that leads Ruth into moving in back with her family. She goes through a really bad breakup. Like, she was so unceremoniously dumped.
That was a really bad way to get dumped too.
Like, it's been a while since I've finished this book, but correct me if I'm wrong. She is about to move into a new apartment with her fiance.
So she thinks,
but he's been packing his stuff separately.
Yeah.
And just as they're about to go down to Joel's family for Christmas, which she has always done for the past couple of years, he's like, you're not coming to see my family on Christmas. In fact, I am not moving in with you. And I think we should break up. and that is how she gets dumped. And it's not even a boyfriend. It's a fiance.
Yeah.
And like the whole situation.
Why don't we get married?
Yeah. He seems like a, like, I don't know, like, okay, I have friends or I know people who have done stuff for their significant other and have it lead nowhere. I guess like, because she gives up school for him.
Yeah,
right?
she gave up so much for him. But see, we shouldn't be praising her for that. Yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm like, I actually, know, right? I was really appalled that she did that.
Yeah. I was like, girl.
I think it was one year left of school.
No, it was like a semester or something. It was like less than a year. Like 7 months.
Yeah. And I was like,
to follow him to Connecticut.
Oh, God.
See, I can't even tell you guys my full story of my experience with my boyfriends because you guys would like make me leave because I've done so much way worse than Ruth, which is why I relate to her so much on like, on her decisions and her thought process, which is completely illogical and completely destructive. And that's the thing. Like, you get through this dark comedy, you get introduced to the layers of understanding her because it's pulled from her perspective. But then what she reveals about her parents, you know, throughout the story, what I'm understanding at my age, I'm a little bit older than Ruth. I'm very a little bit older than Ruth, but just understanding, I'm right at that cusp, but it's that turning point where you become the parent, first of all. Mm-hmm. And then second of all, you realize I think we're all in the process of realizing what we have inherited, because I think we're at that point where our parents are becoming humans, right? And not just our parents, and recognizing the mirror or the, you know, parallels between their relationships and maybe the habits that you do. And that's a lot of what I noticed, just because I've gone through so many similar experiences with like shitty boyfriends. Am I allowed to cuss?
Yeah, totally.
I've had one really shitty boyfriend, and then I've just had a numerous like quasi dysfunctional relationships where I was like codependent or what, you know, whatever, and kind of compromising myself too much.
Yeah. And
so I was like, Ruth, girl.
Like, I got you.
I got you. Stop it.
Yeah. And again, the relatable part is I understand what it feels like to like put out, like, because it's not, if Ruth was like perfectly clear-headed and
Wouldn't be no fun to read.
also, she noticed all the warning signs. Like, it's not like she didn't. She just decided to put it aside, which is kind of her character at the beginning of the book. Someone who, like, there was a passage in the book saying that one reason she avoided doing so, like going back home for like years, is because she didn't want to confront the things that have changed, right?
Yeah.
And
well, I mean, Joel exhibits that behavior too, right? I think everybody in their way, and Linus, like her brother stays away when they need him. And again, it's very close to home with everything. But that universal thing of whether it's Asian families, you know, she's half Asian, and whether it's not, like, again, I have tons of other ethnicity friends who've all dealt with that same fear of, I can't confront this. This is just too much. And I don't even know how. Like, I'm not equipped to talk about this.
And then she has the whole, I'm thinking like, Andy and, what was,
April?
No, what's the,
I think Parks and Rec.
Leslie's best friend.
Oh, Anne.
Yeah. Like, I'm thinking like Andy and Anne, that one episode where she was like,
oh God, that was such a bad relationship. There was that one
where she was like kind of feeling really sorry about herself, saying like, I loosened the jar and she like,
I called Marvin girl.
You know what else is unfair about Joel? That I loosened the jar lid so somebody else could open him.
Every boyfriend I've ever had. But you know what? Whoever I end up with, he got loosened by someone else. So thank you.
You made another person's terrible. Life like much easier because they don't have to do as much soul searching and work.
Yes. But also the person that you inherit or receive, same thing. Circle of life, Lion King.
Yeah.
So she comes, so Ruth goes down for Christmas, just for Christmas.
Right.
And that's when her mom says, hey, why not stay for just a year? Because you're like, I need help. I can't take care of your dad by myself.
Her dad is basically being frozen out of his job because he's exhibiting signs of
dementia.
Like forgetting classes, repeating lectures. And like part of it is her mom's not used to having him home all the time, right?
Well, I think it's all of it. Just like,
we learn very quickly that this family has a lot of issues that they just have not touched, just kind of put into a drawer and just never looked at it, never opened it.
So much like many families.
So like, so Ruth's father, first off, he had affairs. So that's a strain on his marriage. He's had alcoholism. So that is also a strain on his relationship with his son, Ruth's brother. And, yeah, like just a lot of issues.
I don't want to presume. See, this is my thing. This is my personality. I'm a very intuitive person, right? And I'm very into talking about things like this and family and like finding out everybody's, you know, deepest, darkest fears and their biggest dreams and all that stuff. So in the process of being that person, I don't know, like I've learned a lot from my own family and my friends' families. Like I have an odd tendency to draw out secrets from a lot of people. So a lot of the older generation, including my family and seriously some of my friends' parents and stuff, they'll tell me stuff that they probably never told their kids or they never told, you know, a lot of other people. I have been the ear for many.
You're like a chamber of secrets in your head.
Kind of. I'm legit. And, you know, I'm just saying, I think all this drama, obviously the health issues is one thing, but the secrets, right? Either, and there's so many versions of whatever secret of things that people are ashamed of.
Yeah.
And like things that they've done to like hurt other people. That is in every single family. So whether that's like adultery or whether that's like taking money or like, you know, just like dishonoring your family somehow, everyone has that, which is why I'm guessing this is why this is so popular, that there's so many touch points of relatability in terms of like, my family can't talk about that thing. So we put that in the drawer. Yeah. And so when she talks about it so casually with like her brother, cause she's trying to get Linus like journeying down back to SoCal.
And part of it is I think she knows she doesn't want to know. Right.
Well, but yeah, she does.
Because the thing is, like, she's known about it for a very long time, like through her brother, because she went to college, and then her brother is telling her all these things, and
she stayed away.
For her, it's like for Ruth, we realize that she tends to hold on to memories, like she she's kind of a hoarder of memories,
and she's a Cancer.
So she's just like I want to maintain this like image of like a perfect dad and like a loving mom and like a happy family.
Because that's something that, because the book is told through the perspective of Ruth, she does mention that the dad she knew is different than the dad her brother knew, because the dad her brother knew was the one that was having affairs, having like a real drinking problem. And it was a bad time after she left, right? Mm-hmm. Part of it is also guilt, right? Guilt that she...
I think there's a lot of guilt.
There's a lot of guilt. I'm sure it's like guilt that she didn't go back as often to like help her brother with the burden, and like guilt that she didn't talk to her dad about his drinking problem or talk to her mom and be like a better, more supportive daughter. Yeah. Like I'm sure there's a lot of layers of guilt there, but I thought it was really funny how the book opened, because it's just like she gets a call from the Christmas decorator people in the streets and they're like, hey, we found a pair of pants with your dad's name on it. There's a bunch of clothes over here. And she's just like, okay, I guess this is a lot more serious than I thought it was.
And I like that the book is one part kind of just slacker comedy, right? She's, you know, there's that Christmas party she goes to with her friend Bonnie. Or she like kind of meets up with some of her old friends, and you meet the one dude who, like the bearded redheaded dude who's calls himself a sushi chef, although he just cleans
the fish. So her recollect, every time she runs into people that she knows from her past, are all hilarious. Because it's, we all know that, you know, we're all running into people from on Facebook even.
The one friend she runs to at the, I think it was supermarket, who was the skinniest girl in high school and now has like two kids. And immediately added her on Facebook, started sending her so much like junk.
Oh yeah, with like with that like YouTube video of the most dangerous chocolate in the world. That's actually a thing, you guys.
Like I'm not surprised.
Yeah. And I love the way that she like, and then I went home and I made the most dangerous chocolate cake in the world.
No, I love those little details. Those details with like food, like you're talking about, were so special, because the food paints its own story about what the family is like and what they're into, the vegetables, the cruciferous vegetables. I'm sorry, that was one
the first
thing.
Time I learned that word.
Oh, really? I said it to you. I
didn't register it as like,
man,
oh,
that joke
it's like
with the
cross.
Dad being like, oh, my crucified vegetables.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
oh, he forgot the word. Oh, no.
And it's such a very specific part of my life because I'm like, I can't eat as many cruciferous vegetables as I want. But then they're saying that it's like helps with dementia. I was like, oh, shit. Get back on it.
I mean, like with food, I joke with a lot of people saying like Asian families, we don't say I love you to each other. We say I love you through food. We mm-hmm. say it.
Did
like,
you eat? Are you hungry?
Did you? Oh my god, that reminds me of the BuzzFeed video that you did.
My Asian mom video.
Yeah. Wasn't like, things Asian moms say video. Check it
the
out.
The odd ways Asian moms say I love you.
Yeah. Which is interesting because this isn't. Like, even though the characters are, like, physically or genetically half Chinese, I don't think their family is very Asian American per se, because their mom is Chinese, but she's adopted.
And her dad. I like that. I really like that they brought that side of Asian America. Mm-hmm. You know, she's Chinese American, but she doesn't know her. And that's mentioned because she talks about when her grandparents died, and she's talking about her adoptive grandparents, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And just like how much she doesn't know about. She mentions it slightly, but she mentions how she doesn't know where
and her mother's from. Parents, even if they do exist, they don't know where they are.
Right, exactly. That's a real story, you know. There's so many people, whether they're full or they're half, or you know.
Yeah.
And she talks about her family, her dad's side's been there in America since the beginning of time, or something. The Irish and Polish and
Maybe this is on me for assuming because it's an Asian American author, but it took me a while until that sentence. Oh, okay.
I totally felt the same thing. I was like, this is she?
Because Young could be that could be a 1980s coming to America, translation error.
I thought it was very, like, sad but endearing how Ruth's mother stopped cooking. And she was just like, nothing with aluminum foil and only juices. And
sounds like my
and only
such
thing,
a
only
Asian
healthy
mom
stuff.
Thing to do. Like, my mom, like, read so much like health blogs now and like I was always sending me stuff and
and then Minji shows up to work next to Marvin and lectures him on eating more vegetables.
She comes home and it's like we're all about juicing now. We're juicing.
That was me. I bought my parents a juicer for Christmas.
Oh, wow.
And they didn't want it. They gave it to my brother. Rude.
But it makes sense. Like
health.
She was
well-being.
Yeah, when Ruth first came back, like her mom was still blaming herself for the dementia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And too much aluminum in like all the packaging. And
man, the line though that really, really just destroyed me was like, I didn't think it would be like this. And she's like, what? And she's like, having a daughter.
Oh.
That was one of the saddest lines, like parts of the whole thing.
That's like, that's one of those moments. Because this book, it swings, right? You have some funny non sequiturs. You have this like building narrative of like, their plot to keep their dad like sane and then
it's real
the individual moment to moment like or the moment where she has a real conversation with either her mom or her dad like those are some of the most like affecting moments in the book like, that line
when I reached that scene I just threw my like Kindle on the couch and I was like I can't do this because like literally like I'm not even joking like literally a couple days before I read that scene I had a fight with my mom and it was like almost word for word and I was like I can't just like
Rira
and I was just like okay
if I didn't have suggestion right now I'd be hugging all upon you. I've been having saying. This is like so relevant at any point. My family's having our own arguments about my aging parents and like their future. And my brother and I are like the co-conspirators. Yeah. We have a little brother that we kind of keep in the dark. No offense, Dennis. We love you. But like, you know, we know our parents in a different way. We have different parents than the young one has. And you know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's that struggle. The struggle's real and I get it.
And that's something that actually didn't really register until you mentioned it. Was this whole book is about that period of time where the child becomes a responsible adult.
That's what I yelled at my older brother right now. Cause he still has XYZ thoughts and, you know, issues with my father. Cause my dad's a difficult guy. But I literally yelled at him on the phone last week, a few days before I read this book. I was like, we are the parents now. Like, don't take that as a burden. I'm not saying that to like yell at you. It's just the reality. You can't like, we just have to deal and we have to accept it.
And on that part, it's kind of like, that's what makes it also kind of an Asian American story, because for a lot of Asian Americans, at least culturally, Asian culture, the kids are expected to become the caretakers.
Yeah, we're expected to have our parents and grandparents live with us and take care of them.
The worst thing we could do is throw them in a retirement home and forget about them.
And that's when you get Mushu and be like, dishonor on you, dishonor on your family, dishonor on your cow.
Oh my gosh. But like, I think that's the funny thing is I've had a lot of conversations with non-Asian friends, especially recently, because I don't know, I think it just came up, you know, and I'm in my 30s and my friends are like all kind of dealing with it in their versions, but I've been praised, or people have said things in not ironic way, just in a very sincere way. They're like, I think it's really incredible how much Asian people like honor their parents. And I feel like I want to be better about that, because they see that with their grandparents or whatever. And everybody's families are different, but we're very, you know, very generalizing right now. But they're just like, no, it didn't require as much effort for my family to deal with my grandparents. They kind of just did their own thing. Mm-hmm. But they're like, I think it's amazing how much you really make sure that they're taken care of. And sometimes it's the worst thing, because you're just like, you can't live your life kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's honestly, I didn't want ever that be that resentful of my parents.
Yeah.
But I got resentful of the culture in general. Like,
I do think, like, I mean, not every family is the same. I'm sure there are family members who take advantage of that.
Right.
Yeah.
But
and like, there are families that are just like so perfect. It's like,
shut your face.
It's not. It's
but
not,
you don't know. It's all. You don't it's know. All it's perfect. Ruse. Asian people especially are masters at the perfect image.
Oh.
We're good with secrets.
Yes.
Until it pops out.
Until it all
falls apart. Until Minji writes her tell-all book, My Family's Secrets.
Oh, yes.
But with, like, the caretaker thing. And your family's secrets. With, like, the child becoming the parent, we see that through the journal that her dad leaves behind.
Oh, my God.
And there's a point also where...
switches. We'll get
to that. It switches. Yeah. But yeah,
oh, my God.
Those journals... Like, so a lot of our members, their favorite parts was the journals that her dad wrote for her, like the memories.
Destroyed me. Right? I can't even...
I have one that I wrote down that I thought was pretty funny. Today, we went over to your mother's friend's house for dinner. We'd ask you to be polite, so you said, no more, please. It's horrible. Thank you.
That was cute.
So good. Yeah. She was such a character.
She's such a sassy girl. And it's like, it's so nice because like she is getting glimpses of like her father's thoughts, right?
Yeah.
And like, and then when the journal switches over to her and she's like chronicling her funny moments
today.
With her dad.
You did this.
He's like, I made you salmon today and you said it was esculent. And I thought that was really funny, but.
Yeah, like there is a point where the journal becomes less about her and more about her time with her dad. Right.
Destroyed.
Yeah. And it also, like, I think her perception of memories, like, what's the point of remembering things and what are actually memories? I think her thoughts on that changes by the end of the book, because in the first quarter of the book, it's like written in diary format. It's like every day there's like a little paragraph. But then towards the second half of the book, it's focusing more on the months and it's focusing more on moments that happened instead of like very, instead of like very specific memories.
There's another dad journal passage that our book club member Teresa put on her forums that she really liked. That was more emotional. It's like less funny, but more emotional. The one that, today I didn't catch you before you swallowed your chewing gum. I looked away for a second and then it was gone. I'm sorry. Today was your birthday. And when it was time for you to blow out the candles, you wouldn't. Time was running out and you were anxious about it. I don't know what to wish for, you told me sadly. After the candles had burned down to nothing, I said, that's okay, I told you. We put new ones in and you successfully blew out this new set.
I'm gonna cry right now.
Yeah, because I think Teresa mentioned in her comment saying that how this is kind of foreshadowing the father's guilt on how he's not being a good father to her and how he knows that he's going to fail in bigger things as she gets older. And it's true, like he does fail, but like you still see that there is like this like I don't know how to describe it, like this nobleness. It's just like I still want the best for my child. I still want to like give her wishes and her like birthday candles.
And that's something that David, the the booktuber we mentioned earlier. He mentioned, because he is a recent empty nester. His daughter just went off to college, and he said this book affected him in the way of like viewing himself as a parent and thinking about from that perspective, which, you know, is something that we probably don't have because none of us here have kids yet.
The only thing I can liken it to is my having my little brother, because I was 10 when he was born. And like, that's the closest thing I have to feeling like really protective and like unconditionally loving to somebody. Like, to a degree, of course, if he really, really messed up, I would hold him accountable. But in my eyes, kind of like, he can do no wrong and I will, you know, destroy somebody for him. But watching my dad, that's why I was just like, she and her dad have a very similar type of connection that, again, I just try to explain to my brother, because, you know, him and my mom have a different relationship than I do with my mom. Mom, daughter, and son, and daughter, and son, and father, and father and daughter are really all different dynamics. And I just relate to that so much about the way that she fights with him the most, in a way. She fought him by kind of like neglecting it and ignoring it. But then she's also such a strong catalyst into bringing some sort of healing or bringing them back together again. And I related to that so much.
And they're like, cute. I mean, there's that one scene where she tries to omit butter from spaghetti. Was it spaghetti or
something? Sugar.
And sugar.
Yeah.
And her dad's like, well,
you tried.
And then she puts it in.
So cute. Yeah, and there's like those small little moments where you catch in the beginning, you catch at the end, where it's like her, the way that her mother likes putting her feet into his pants, like his pant openings.
I love details like that.
Yeah. And
they're so real.
Yeah.
I actually have a quote. I'm sorry, I'm like pulling out all the quotes.
No,
because
I
like wrote it down.
This is
but
great.
I thought this quote really summed up the entire book for me. What imperfect carriers of love we are, and what imperfect givers. That the reasons we can care for one another can have nothing to do with the person cared for. That it has only to do with who we were around that person, what we felt about that person.
Yeah. I totally love that one, that quote.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
There were so many quotable lines in this book.
So I was like, I'm not giving Marvin this book back. I have to like find all the quotes first that I wanted to send to my dad. Like, I'm literally texting him every day trying to encourage him to be happy. So I was like, oh, this.
Oh, speaking of encouraging fathers to be happy, how cute was it that like Theo, I think Theo was
Theo
it like
was
the grad, yeah. The TA who's I like, let's
Theo.
Make a fake class.
That
and I was like,
really...
I was like, this is a Parks and Rec episode.
Please
like,
marry him, Ruth. Please, Jesus.
I just loved how they're like, oh, we don't have a classroom, so we have to like steal a classroom and we have to make sure that the dean doesn't know about
He's
it.
He's her Ben Wyatt, period.
And then who's the rival professor?
Levin.
That was a jerk.
Levin was dean. He was the one who got promoted over
like,
her
I
dad.
Get it. I get it. But also, I wanted to hawk a loogie into his coffee.
But it was,
and I'm not that person. But he made me want.
And those scenes were such like, because one of the students, like Ruth, can tell like, oh, they totally
Jonah,
slept together.
You harlot. you strumpet.
Just like her. Yeah, her the way she like kind of started suspecting and then started really like accusing in the journal. I kind of read that in Minji's voice.
See? Strumpet. No, because, okay, let me just say, I get it. Like, for myself and for, like, again, my family members, like people, relationships are messy. They are inherently messy because we are creatures of emotion. We're always battling emotion with logic. We don't make the best decisions because we're acting off of fear or guilt or shame, etc. And that this book kind of like,
yeah,
in summary, encapsulates all of that. So it's not like, okay, but just don't go to her house. Are you kidding me? When she showed up for dinner, I was like, bitch, please get out of there. That's just, there's lines. Okay, if you're already in the class together, fine. And that's just like, whatever, shady, because his daughter's right there. But then you're going to go to his house with his wife sitting right there.
And she texts her.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that was
that is
not
just,
okay.
And that
you know?
Leads directly to that one scene that you mentioned in the forums too, that you were kind of like, I can't read anymore.
Yeah.
Right? The dishwashing scene after that dinner where Joan and Theo come over.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a lot, you know, that's like, it's just human behavior 101.
I remember that's because Ruth tries saying to her mom, like, she doesn't remember anymore, or he doesn't remember her.
Mm-hmm.
And her mom's like, but I do. And I was like,
as the daughter, I would have just lost my shit. I'm like, excuse me.
I did like, so something that Teresa mentioned that was kind of a negative on her part was the fact that the secondary characters weren't as fleshed out, which is, it was fair.
It was fair criticism.
Yeah. But yeah, I did want to see more from Linus because he seemed cool.
I didn't understand why he suddenly moved back. I know, he had a bad breakup too with his flight attendant girlfriend, but at the same time, I'm like,
yoga, like spiritual, worldly flight attendant girlfriend.
Yeah. I don't know what Linus's job was, but
wasn't he a grad student at UC Santa Cruz?
Oh, he's still writing his thesis. That's right. Okay, maybe that explains it. Because I was like, hey,
it was kind of glossed over. I agree.
I was like, hey, if I was him, and I was like, I don't want to see my family, I would just get my own apartment. I would not move back to my family's house. So I was a little bit confused on that.
He definitely, well, to me, his behavior, I'm reading his behavior, not what she reveals, but like the fact that he does reappear, I'm like, oh, he wants to like, he's feeling the guilt, he's feeling the responsibility, so now he's back. But it kind of, I guess through the reading, kind of reveals that they don't have as strong of a relationship. Yeah. She alludes to it in the beginning when she talks about stopping over. They're very like, they have a camaraderie, but it's not a lot of depth.
But it also seems like he's closer with his mom.
Right.
There are some scenes you read that she's very like close, like she's touching his face. And,
yeah, and like his head is bowed and she didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think whenever a family goes through like infidelity issues, like the children always side with like one parent over the other. Like very rarely do they like take the middle ground for both of their parents.
Oh, I imagine not.
Yeah, it's
tough.
Speaking of secondary characters, I also really liked her best friend, Bonnie.
Oh, man.
And then how she appeared with short hair after breaking up with her slacker boyfriend.
Pixie haircut.
She gave good advice. She was just like, never cut your hair like until like three weeks after a breakup. Don't do it during.
I really liked that tidbit. I was like, noted, kind of quotable.
Yeah. And I thought it was really funny that she was kind of she was Ruth's like moral compass. Like she was the one telling her it's a bad idea to quit school to chase this guy and like always giving these really good advice while also not following her own advice.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because human.
Yeah.
But you need that friend, and that friend is always the one that says it, even if like you're gonna completely never ever listen to them, because someone has had to have said it so you can refer back to it and be like, oh yeah, Bonnie said that. You were right.
So like my question is, I've never really gone through like complicated breakups in my repertoire, but
what version you want, Rira? Got
so like I think there's a quote in the book saying how like the memories of Joel, her ex-fiance, it would just like wash, like it would just come up suddenly as if it was like an ancient candlestick from like an abandoned ship. And I was like, okay, so clearly she is thinking, like replaying a lot of memories that she had with him.
Cause she's a Cancer.
I think it's also, I mean, you can't help, like all your experiences through life, good or bad, make up who you are today. Right. Mm-hmm. So like she was with Joel for what, like 7-8 years. They were going to get married on a whim, but they were going to get married. Right. So I imagine it's not easy to just like block all that out, even if you want to.
And that doesn't even define that you're still in love with them. It's just like a matter of processing, because I think for her, she's the way that she was broken up with, it was she seemed self-aware enough that she knew things were like not going well and they're stagnating and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, but then to have it happen that way, I would imagine it's just such a slap in the face. And she's probably just like trying to find her dignity again in a lot of ways, you know, like how could someone go from wanting to envision and commit the rest of their lives to I'm moving in with some other chick, you know, you're not moving like that behavior is just so indicative of a lack of respect. You know, Joel's in my eyes, he's a coward. Like to do that is just so disrespectful of everything that you shared with this person. And you're like, that's the way you're going to like, that's the decency you don't have for the person you love.
Yeah.
So I just sit on my high horse and judge away.
I mean, there was a quote where, hold on, I had it. Yeah, she says, because I'm through doing things that don't count. I'm through with things that don't add up or amount. I'm just through. And I figured that wasn't just with her relationship.
For sure.
Like,
she definitely goes through like a change, right? From the beginning, from who she is when she first moves home to who she is a year later when it's time for her to move on. You're left with not knowing if she's going to stay with her family or, you know, move on. But, you know, she's definitely in a different space, right? She's learned and she's become more, is confident the right word? Like more solid, I guess? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, well, that's what's revealing, because she's, there's a term in acting is just moment to moment, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing with acting, when you're playing a character, you know how the story goes. You know all the lines and you know all the blocking. You know how the scene's going to end, right? But when you're playing the character, you can't play the end. You have to play that moment. Because at the time, that person, that's all that they know is right now. They don't know, oh, this person that I'm madly in love with right now is going to destroy me in two scenes, right? They don't know that. All they know is like, I love you right now. We're each other's worlds. So I love that. That's what I love about books. It's very much in the present. You have to kind of go through their ups and downs with them. She goes from like missing Joel to hating him, resenting him, then blaming herself, you know, in all these big and little ways.
Yeah.
And then ultimately realizing later that she is over him, even though she thinks about him, that it's just part of her past that she needs to have let go. And you can't let it go until you actually let it go.
Yeah.
Until then, you're just going to keep obsessing, which I know very well.
I do like the one part of moving home that this book captures so well is running into your past.
Yeah.
Like running into people you know.
Oh, man, like I haven't, since my family moved to California, like about like a year after I moved here, I haven't been back to Georgia in like over and over like 6 years. And
wow.
And like I remember the last time I went, like I ran into old high school classmates.
How did that go?
It was so weird. Some of them were married with kids because it's the South. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
Some girls were like, oh, I just went to college to like hook up with a nice boyfriend
to get
with
my MRS degree.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like really weird to see that. And then I had friends who like just blossomed like after high school. Like some of them are models now, and I'm like,
hey,
what?
Yeah.
Like, when did you get so pretty? I don't know. Like, so like you, and then like, it's weird for them because like for me, like I'm definitely not the same person that I was in high school. And, you know, I was one of the very few people in my class that actually went out of state for college. So it's just like, whoa.
See,
like,
props to you, Rira. That's amazing.
But it's just like, yeah, like
it's time warp.
When you run into people that you knew when you were younger, you either like revert back to that younger self for and sure. Have all that insecurity, or you're just like, like I don't know how to interact with you because you're clearly a different person.
But she was like, oh, how's your boyfriend? Or the like, I forgot the name, but like the guy
oh,
she was
dating.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she's, oh, we divorced last year.
But that's what, and I think that's funny when you run into anyone from your past, it's a time warp and it's like, it's an automatic jump to like, where were you in the last time I interacted with you? That honestly, I hope that can be like a good thing to recognize. Oh, I've come really far.
Yeah.
Since that time. And so have you, apparently.
Yeah.
Good job. Change. Good job growing up.
I mean, there are people who like come up to me and are like, how's your brother? And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. Like, he's good. The youngest one, like, he's starting school or whatever. And then they're like, wait, you have another brother? My youngest brother and I are 17 years apart. Wow. So people who did not know me, like after that period are just like, wait a second.
So
like,
many new occurrences.
Like, I missed a lot of things. Yeah, a lot of things change within a matter
they
of
years. They
also like,
had that moment when she runs into her ex at the farmer's market or something.
Do they run into each other?
I don't remember that.
They run into each other, I think.
Was it a dream?
Was it a dream?
It might have been a dream. I don't remember her going back to San Francisco. So okay.
That might have been really a flashback too.
Yeah.
She mentioned that she like saw her car that he
oh yeah she
went
mentioned
back
she like totally like stopped the old apartment they used to live in.
Let's be real, we all do that.
virtually now. So easy to collect information
so them. Easy come on guys.
So I guess my question for you guys or girls, you girls, is what did you think about the overall, because this is a very, you know, there's not a central narrative to the whole thing. The whole thing is kind of just
This book is definitely more of a collection of like vignettes, like very like it's kind of like I think in my review I said it's stitched together with moments,
mm-hmm.
and those moments turn into bigger moments. And that is pretty much the book. You can't really expect a lot of like plot heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Which I like. It's just kind of, I love vignettes and I love sneak peeks into, I appreciate that as much as I appreciate like full fledged narrative, yeah, like storytelling type things. Because you get to kind of, you get to learn in a different way. You kind of, you're watching, you know, reading it, but you're like, yeah, watching them. And so you get to see, right,
cause
how they interact.
Yeah. Cause the fake class subplot of the book ends halfway through the book. Right. And that's,
well, they get caught. It's not like they could have gone on forever.
That's true. But like in like any, if this was like a rom-com or type of show, that would have been the climax, right? Or the, like if this was the, like old school of like movies, I guess.
Did you get emotional at any part, Marv? Or was there any part that like got you really?
I've learned that Marvin is not a very emotional reader.
I get emotional.
Emotional reader, yeah, but you're an emotional person.
I mean, the parts where the dad's general entry, definitely, I agree with you two and our readers and our book club members that those are really, like, I mean, Minji and I will talk about this on our collab cast a lot, just how we're at a point where we're starting to understand who our parents are and who they were when they had us. And part of what David mentions is like from the parent side, it's really, especially her dad who is going through now his decline, like a early decline, but a decline nonetheless. And you start to realize like all the things that he, like you can tell he wishes he was better.
Oh, the right? Doorknob thing.
Yeah.
That like destroyed me. I keep saying destroyed, but like, I think that was around the time right before they get to the line, goodbye vitamin, when mm-hmm. I understood that's when I cried.
Yeah.
I broke because I forgot what the exact buildup was to that.
It was, there was a certain point where he decides to confront, like to maybe not accept, but at that moment, accept that he is eventually going to be like invalid.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And that really just broke my heart. And so kind of this buildup of like understanding and the humor and then the reflection and the nostalgia and then the drama and then the humor, you know, it all kind of like makes your heart very full. But at that point, it was like, you know, it was so close to my heart with like helping my own father deal with his health and the concern that you have as a child towards your parent and the appreciation you have and the feeling of like helplessness. I was like,
And wasn't there a scene where he tells Ruth that she should leave after this year?
Yeah, that was Christmas Day.
Yeah.
1 year later. And they were like walking around and he's like, I'm fine. Like you, like it's been a year. There's like no obligations. And
like you live your life, but you know, it's left open whether or not she will like take his advice or stay. And it reminds, cause I just saw
Theo, you have to stay.
And at that point, she's kind of, you can tell she's settled in to like, instead of it being like totally a temporary thing, she's kind of just settled in. Like she goes and buys groceries. She like goes back to buy a chicken for her dad. Like
the rotisserie chicken thing is so cute.
Right. They bought the rotisserie chicken thing from the infomercial.
Well, I love that she's like allowing that whole experience and everything that happened with the fake class and everything. Mm-hmm. The Theo thing is a part of her healing from Joel, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's obviously multiple stories going on at the same time. It's not just about her father and her. It's a lot about her and Joel, which you wouldn't know unless you got to hear it specifically from the first person narrative and from this journal format. And I relate to that a lot. And then I love it when she gets to that point where she tells him, she calls him up and says, I'm generally positive about you. I laughed out loud so hard. I was like, yes, girl.
That's a
progress.
Means, yeah, that's a good place to be. I enjoy being generally positive about things.
That's something I would say now. I think I'm so guarded about, like, yes, I feel generally positive about things.
They do have some cute moments. There's a part where he comes over to play Monopoly and he lets her be the thimble or
that's so cute.
The top hat, or I forgot which piece.
I mean, there were a lot of cute moments with like the grad student storyline. Like, I can't believe they went to Disneyland for like class. And at that point, I think the dad was just like, whatever, YOLO, just like, no, like, I don't have to lecture. Let's go to Disneyland.
Go to Disneyland.
And they actually had actual California historical facts in the book.
No, I totally thought of you when they were talking about the San Gabriel mission. I was like, Marvin's gonna get such a kick out of this.
I was trying to figure out where they are, right?
Didn't she say like she was born in Fontana or something? Yeah. I remember that.
So definitely like South Bay slash like Orange County, maybe.
Yeah.
I thought they were still in East. That's what I thought this whole time.
I don't know.
Because I was trying to place where her dad's
I'm not a native.
I'm not a native, but I love mapping things out.
Yeah. But yeah, I like that they left certain things vague too, you know?
I like how this book, I originally thought that it was going to be more about kind of like a quarter life crisis on like on Ruth's part. Like, oh, like, how do I get a job? How do I like get a social life again? Like, how do I find my footing again? But really, this book is more about her family. It's not really about Ruth herself.
But it also kind of is. It's that story in this setup that is real. It's a real setup, you know.
And I think that's what I would say to anybody going through a quarter life crisis. That's literally the advice I would give based on like the turmoil I went through in my mid and late 20s. Because I'm telling you, 29 is like a really shitty time.
Oh,
sometimes.
Thanks.
Like, it just like, is.
I have
you know
so
why?
Much to look
they
forward to.
There's Jupiter's return. No, but some
it's
people go through
it's it. Because when you turn 30, you don't give a shit anymore.
Well, that's part of it, though. But you, honestly, it's earned because you have to give a shit. You have to like struggle a little bit. And some people go through it before 29 and some people go through it later. I mean, that's just a generalized time. But late 20s is tough because you're still figuring a lot of things out. You probably have a few serious relationships under your belt and whatnot. But I think what you're saying is totally true. And that's, it would be in alignment with advice I would give to quarter life crisis and midlife crisis people. When you get back to what matters, the immediate things at hand, which in this case was her family, those other things fall in place. Ironically, when you take the attention off of like, what the hell am I doing with my career? How do I deal with this relationship? Like, oh, can't deal with that right now. Got to take care of my dad. That helped her bring that full circle, right? And so, like, she decides to be a go do the 2-year something.
Yeah,
program,
like a 2-year program,
right?
I forgot what it was.
Is it for sonography?
But she's already a
It's like a cardiac.
Yeah,
it's like a cardiac.
She's a tech, but I think she's being certified for like
machines. Yeah, like leveling up.
I mean, I just like how.
How she liked, what was it? She enjoyed the faces of her patients when they found that they were having twins.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I figured that's not fun. Like for the mom.
She said, or horror of the faces.
Yeah. But I liked how it was about this family, this imperfect family and broken family, kind of learning how to live together again. Cause I haven't lived with my family since I was 17. So, like, I can only imagine, like, how hard it is, especially when your teenagers are like full-fledged adults who are like in their 30s. Like that must be really weird for the parents at least.
Yeah. For sure.
And for Ruth to just kind of, like you said, move from a quarter of memories to someone who is focused on creating
new ones,
like creating and documenting new ones with the time.
I guess like for her, it's not about like, oh, I need to remember this for the future. It's more like, no, just enjoy it.
Yeah,
just
I'm
like,
appreciating it right now.
Be present right now.
Yeah. I really liked that.
Yeah.
Did you guys like the ending?
Remind me how it
ends. It's just because they're doing the marching thing or something, and then it just kind of drops off there. She doesn't take you further. Like, they're all dealing with it. The doorknobs haven't changed, all that. Yeah. And it kind of just ends
there.
They
just, like, go for a walk, right?
Yeah.
I liked it. I mean, I wasn't expecting any huge closure or anything, but the fact that it ends on a happy memory with her family, that's, you know, it's different than how it started, which was like, my life sucks.
Yeah.
This is what's happened to me.
I was fearful, like before I got to the end that, you know, I didn't know at what point the book was going to end. It's like, oh my God, am I going to have to be, do I need to put this down for a while?
That was another fear I had too, like reading in the beginning. It's like, are we going through, because of the journal style, are we going through the entire arc of her dad's illness?
Yeah. I was like, God, please say no.
That's really funny because for me, I was like, oh, it's going to end on Christmas Day. Like, cause it's going to end with the same, like opening, same date as the first chapter. So I was like, okay, well, at least I know it will end, because while I was reading this, I was like, my suffering end.
Did you look ahead to check it?
No, I didn't. Oh. I was like, it has to get better. It just has to get better. I can't deal with this right now.
Well, because it's such a, even like the cover is so like bright and like, it's pitched as a comedy, like a slacker comedy.
As a dark comedy, as a slice of life with bittersweet.
And which is like, well, it's about Alzheimer's and
well, that's the funny thing. Okay, so that's just where my brain's at with family and like mortality. Mm. Not to be morose about anything, but just really honestly, in my 30s, I think about death a lot more. And not in a, I'll say it's not morbid. It's just like, because you said you have less shits to give, because you're just like, I don't have time or energy for this. You realize how time speeds up. Mm-hmm. You get tired faster. So like literally your hours in your day kind of shorten. So I don't know. Like I felt like even if there's, I have faith in Rachel. She could have written a very great, taken us there and then figured out how to close it out. And that's kind of the funny thing is that you're not being like cradled or anything. She's not like cushioning anything, but her humor and her ability to kind of go from light to dark. I think she could have like, I'm not asking or wishing that she did, but I think she could have gone there and still had like these very like poignant, emotional and then funny and light.
This would make like a good things. ABC, like family drama or sitcom or dramedy.
Right. Yeah, I mean that's the genre of dramedy.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know, ABC, maybe ABC.
I think I get more emotional NBC? Over not NBC. Definitely not NBC.
Definitely not CW because it's not.
No. There's no vampires in it.
But like for me, like when I read books that are more like heavy, they don't affect me as much because I'm like, oh, it's just heavy all the way through. Yeah, it's like you just have an armor up. But then when you're reading a book like this, it's like a pendulum. And you're like, I don't know. Is it going to be comic?
Where am I going now?
Just to be clear, I did have tears. I just didn't cry.
Aww.
I don't have
yes,
emotions.
Yes, you have feelings. When did you have tears?
During the journal entries.
Parts.
The part where it's like, I didn't think this was how it was going to be.
Yeah.
Because I feel that sometimes, and I wonder if my parents feel that sometimes too.
Well,
anyway.
The good thing is, I'm going to leave my thoughts. So my concluding thoughts on this book is that it's definitely a roller coaster, but I think it's a great one. And I think it's really clever and funny. But it's also just this reminder that it's life's not not in a bad way. Life's not meant to be easy, but it's meant to be dealt with and experienced. And then in that, you can really gain so much. And you watch this character through this 1 year period just go through like, it's a hellish ordeal. Like that's really one of my worst fears is how I'm going to deal with my parents like really age. And that's already happening right now. So I don't know. It just gave me a good boost of like total sentimental.
Yeah.
You know, feels because it makes you just appreciate the now. And it makes you honestly kind of more equipped. Like, okay, she dealt with all this stuff. Now, who knows what my lot is going to be? Mm. But I got the internet to help me. I have my family and my friends. I got funny books and Netflix. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of think about, well, what do I have as my arm? What are my tools that I have to deal with my stuff going forward?
Yeah. Definitely a feel good book with heavy themes.
I don't know if it's feel good.
I don't know if it's feel good. Like, but it's meaningful.
Yeah, it is poignant. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very meaningful.
Yeah, I guess that'll do it for this discussion of Goodbye Vitamin by Rachel Kong. Thanks for writing such a great book that really speaks to my millennial heart.
She also has a cookbook, you guys.
So oh, awesome.
I think it's called All About Eggs.
Yes.
And if you all have anything to add to our discussion, please sound off on our Goodreads forums. We'd love to hear more of your guys' thoughts, what you think about our thoughts, and just, you know, whether you liked it, whether you didn't like it, doesn't matter. As long as you engage, we'll be happy.
And it is October, so right, that means reading? A new book. We are reading The Ghost Bride by Yang Zhe-Chu. We've been announcing this book for a while, so hopefully you have it in your hands or on your Kindle.
Minji's not a fan of ghosts.
It's not a scary novel.
I'm changing. I'm evolving as a person.
It's a historical novel set in like the 1800s in Malaysia.
Very cool.
Yeah. It's not scary at all. Mm-hmm. But we are still trying to decide our November pick. We want to read a sci-fi paperback.
Right. There is a thread going on right now on our Goodreads forum. So if you have any suggestions, I think right now we're thinking between Nine Fox Gambit and something else.
Yeah, and something else. I need more spaceships and magic in our collection of books right now because we've been reading a lot of contemporary and like more real life stuff. I need more magic stuff.
Gotta switch it up. But yeah, please join our Goodreads group and follow us on Twitter and Facebook to sound off on your thoughts. And on that note, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thanks again to Minji Chang for joining us. Where can people find
stuff? Thank you for having me. Thank you, Rhea, for inviting me. I'm glad I got to read this book, and this was really fun. You guys can follow me on Instagram at Minjeezy, M-I-N-J-E-E-Z-Y. Twitter, it's the same thing with two extra E's. And you can listen to my podcast, First of All Pod, or Collabcast.
Yeah.
And or Collabcast.
Check us out on the podcast, on the Potluck Podcast Collective Network. On that note, until next time, I think the next episode is going to be our October news and new releases episode.
So yep, there are so many books.
Stick around to then.
So many.
And we'll catch y'all later. Thanks, Minji, for joining us.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
This episode of Books and Boba was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and edited by Marvin Yue. Special thanks to our guest Christine Minji Chang for joining us for this month's book club discussion. Catch her on her podcast, First of All, a real unfiltered conversation on career, family, love, and modern culture, along with Books and Boba on the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of podcasts featuring unique voices from the Asian American community. Check out those shows and other great podcasts hosted by Asian Americans by going to the website www.podcastpotluck.com.